core of the concept is direct trade, right? And as has been mentioned today indirectly, why is direct trade so important? It creates, you were talking about this, Crew, right? The social thing, right? It's accountability, understanding, co-planning, predictability for farmers, all these things. So I think we need to start talking together anymore, right? And I think this is gone. And I saw like the Michelin restaurants, they all have like two people hustling in the Happy Carrot. But now a food truck on Grüne Löcke is selling the same scallops like Maemo does, right? And that's where we start talking, right? So that they go together. Yes, we started this in 2017. We started in Norway because we are living here. We are venture capital based. It's also important to say building technology is very expensive, right? And of course, especially the whole logistics part. And especially it's difficult if you don't have economies of scale, right? Because we used a lot of money on just like subsidizing transport, because we had to price the transportation today based on what it's cost when we have the volume. Otherwise, we'll never get anybody on board. Things went really well. We started 2017, 2020. We really thought now it's happening. So we had this event, Seed to Fork, at Bon Leo, a beautiful restaurant in this town, which our friends invited all the farmers, all the kitchens, and started planning together. We did like when you use carrot future. So there were really agreements that they're going to buy whole fields, half fields, according. And that was January 2020, not the best timing. So everything now we're getting slowly up again. So, well, I start talking. So just give you an idea. Yes, here, the last 12 months, we've moved through 300. I calculated this morning, 340 tons of food have been moved through our system. Press the,
Press the
that's, yeah.
mouse.
So we moved the last since 1st of September last year, we moved 340 tons of food. It was a revenue of 25 million NOK. If you quickly do the math, it's around 3,000 per order. That's still very little, right? But at least 340 tons is a lot of food, right? And of course, the important thing, the most biggest part of the money stays with the producers, right? And also we remove the premium for the sustainable food. Like we sold the same cauliflower from this, I know the Norwegians, maybe this is Heinrich Jung, one of the heroes of Norwegian farming. This is the head chef of Arakataka, a restaurant in Oslo that's buying over 60% directly from us, right? And I asked him, like, how do you do this? How you earn money? And he said, well, you know, he had this 10-course set menu, and one dish was like 50 shades of squash, right? It was this amazing biodynamic squash. And he said, well, it's the most expensive squash I ever bought, but it's still cheaper than the cheapest chicken out there. And it's so tasty, they can't get away with it. They're putting it as one part of a menu. And this is the way of thinking we need, right? And again, they sit together and like argue and discuss and fight and find solutions. And I think this is what we need to do. So we're standing to everything. We started at the top with the Michelin restaurants, and then we worked our way down, right? We always work with the front runners to get them on board. And 2017, that was harder than today. Even it's still very hard today. Yeah, and we're seeing this is a bit of the bigger ones. The only, if you see, the only public institutions are not in Norway, they're in Denmark, right? Of course. And the only real canteen that really is moving volume is Dugur Canteen. I think it's the canteen with the greenest profile in Norway. They're really going in and co-planning, et cetera, hotels. And then, I mean, like, what makes me very happy? Bama, the biggest classic wholesaler, was the biggest, second biggest customer this month. And what happened that Omna, I don't know, it's like the biggest vertical farming indoor company in Norway. They use us for everything, right? All their sales go through us. Bama, the wholesaler, buys all the salad. They buy it through us. So that was, we opened a bottle of bubbles. Now I'm going back. How do I go forward? Very quick about our, I said we don't own anything, right? And first we have to match supply and demand, and then great. And then how do we get the food to the place? And we decided very early, if you want to build a scalable business, we can't use infrastructure. But then the hypothesis was also the problem is not the lack of infrastructure. I mean, logistics is a coordination problem, right? It's like who needs what information at what time and what format. Basically, that's what it does, boils down to. And since we have as you said, the infrastructure connecting all the dots, we have all the data, right? We have all the producers, and they provide the most information, right? We spend a lot of time on farms building tools for and with producers so that they actually can run their own shop, because otherwise we couldn't make a living one day in the future with a cut of 7%, right? So we say always move them up the value chain. So we have all the data necessary, and then we have, through experimenting and iterating and like a lot of failures and burning a lot of money, figured out the system, how it works, and that now moves 340 tons of vegetables. And that's like, so we have a local hub, which often is existing infrastructure, right? It's some farmer that has more space. And so let's say like you three order three restaurants, and you order from these four farms, which are in different areas. And like each of you is close to one hub, and then you get the orders from restaurant one, and you the system, and you communicate, and then you agree, and then it's the handshake, and then you print out the labels, and you pack it ready per restaurant, you put it on the box, and then you deliver to the hub together with the others. And there's somebody standing, combining it all together, and the system generates another label where we move from boxes to pallets. And then this pallet is picked up, and that's what we'd say with aggregated economies of scale. I mean, moving pallets is not the problem. Moving boxes is expensive, right? But then it turns into a fixed cost, and it gets like easier. This comes with third-party logistics players into a city hub where the cross-docking is, right? Your three restaurants get like boxes from three different hubs. They're compiled again, and then they're driven out to the individual kitchens. And no, it sounds really easy, but it was really wasn't. So this is Dagens, and I would love to talk more about this. We don't have time. And then the other thing is changing food. Like I left Dagens operationally 1.5 years ago because I wanted to expand to Germany, but the capital markets dried up, and then we realized I'm not the one for like fine grinding bottom lines, right? And so, and I'm too expensive. And then I did a year of nothing, which I can. It's a very good thing. I would suggest it for everyone. And then I joined a Changing Food, which is an organization for came out of the Copenhagen House of Food. That was an important part in converting the Copenhagen municipality from 0 to 90% ecological procurement. And so it's the same method they use in guiding canteens who want to change, right? And we have touched on, upon this here. And I mentioned it before to you, man in black, right? That because we hear so much excuses, right? So we had like 2 years ago, Kjell Inge Røkke, who now wants to build Google Village in Fornebu, had this new head chef that was an old friend who was before at Flying Culinary Circus. And he was the new head chef to build the most sustainable canteen, 4,500 meals a day. And yes, I'm going all in Dagens. And he really did like 60% directly from the farmer eco. And then I often went with the deliveries just to see what happens. And there is like coming like 40 crates of unwashed eco carrots, and the kitchen didn't have knives. They only had scissors, right? For example, right? And then we tried a bit and then failed. And then his boss said, we can never work with local food. And case closed, he quit, our friend in the kitchen, right? So, and this is one example how you really, it's not only procurement and even like tenders or then a procurement system. You need to change the infrastructure in the kitchen, right? You also need to change competences, motivation, and you have to build competence, right? Educate people. Start making your own bread. What we do, I'm right here. We can go from 0 to 60% ecological procurement within the same budget, and we've done this with kitchens. And it sounds a bit too good to be true. And how you do it, reshuffle the money, right? If you go through, we have a tool where we analyze all the procurement data and make a baseline, right? How much money you spent on what, convenience, fresh, import, et cetera. And then we see just by shifting, make your own bread, right? You know, you save so much money, stop using convenience food, right? This is some initial investment. Right. But then it is like a double win. You save a lot of money, which you can reshuffle to pay for ecological food, buy other things. Also, if you buy direct, it doesn't need to be so much more expensive. But also the other thing is it motivates your people, because in the end, the most important thing is the customer satisfaction. You can do everything you want, do everything right. Then you have the guys who want to eat and they hate that they don't get their meatballs and their brown sauce. And then if they make enough riot, it will stop. So you need to take them with you. And how you do this? By having kitchen staff that has ownership and pride of the food they serve. And I mean, I used to be a chef, and like opening bags with the scissors is no pride. Right, which has happening in other cities now is like the high-end canteens, not those who go for a race to the bottom on price, but really want to stand out. All the chefs like 35 plus who come from the Michelin world now go to the canteens, right? And this, but they don't go there if they're only opening bags. So it's catch 22. So a lot to tell here, but not now. Come and find me later. Okay, I'll try it again. Or maybe before I go this. So if we talk now, okay, we have darkens, we have the supply chain that could, like, with the existing system for sure. No, I didn't, it didn't work, but then I realized I should talk a bit more before the like. So we have this supply chain that really works, right? And it works, and it works here, and it works in Denmark, and we could have 10 times as much food pushing through. And we have the supply, the producers, we have the infrastructure, but the demand is the problem. Right. And then again, we see this. Okay. And then I think, okay, what's the problem? Because I hear all these excuses, excuses, excuses. We need more regulatory change and we need more money and we cannot, it's the EU law. And this is all true. But I think if we wait for all this, we're going to wait forever. Right. I think this is the big problem. And okay, now it's right. And what is the problem? People want change without change. Right? I think this is the problem. If you want to make real transformation, it's going to be nasty, dirty, painful, ugly. And you need to get out of your comfort zone. And you cannot keep doing what you've been doing, right? You have to, like, get out there and fail and then go back and do it again, right? And of course, it's not everybody now has the mandate. If you realize this IT system we have here really sucks, right? It's not up to you to change the entire system. But then again, right, you could, like, start pushing and pushing and pushing. And I know it's a lot to ask, but I think really, and this what it gets down to in the end, there is no change without change. And the discomfort of change is the price we pay, right? Easier said, but I did it. Right? I'm still doing it. And I really encourage you to do it more. And why? Because, I mean, you've seen this last week. Stockholm Resilience Center. So now all the nine planetary boundaries are really completely assessed, and we transgressed six of them, right? So shit's hitting the fan, right? And I think this is the time where you want to ask yourself also when we after these 2 days and the great motivational talks. So how does my organization or company address these issues? And do they really have an action-based, like, steps towards changing this, right? And if not, what can I, you do to really talk to my leaders or within the organization, right? You tomorrow. So what can I do, right? And then if you think, you know what, there isn't so much I really can do, you might want to ask yourself, is this the place where you want to spend most of your working hours, your competence, your passion? So maybe it's time to get another job. Right. So time is out, so please come and talk to me and talk everybody who might be interested. I would love to talk about, of course, increase of local ecological produce in your kitchens. What are the problems, right? I would love to talk about dynamic purchasing systems, right? I think especially for the public sector, this is really interesting. And I'm involved in some EU projects where I work with this. And what I see, I mean, it really is, can be the answer. It's in other procurement than food. It's already happening. But what I also see that many municipalities start investing money and building their own systems. And I think the one thing the world really doesn't need is more money down the drain to build platforms that people neither have the competence nor really the mandate or the money to build it, because it's very expensive, it's very big. So of course, like, I'm not talking about me, there are other people in the UK. You have great things going on. Even in Slovenia, they're building stuff, right? So of course, I have two companies heads on that can actually help with these things, but I also know other people working with this. And I think it's important that we have these meaningful conversations and discussions.